we just had a coach moment where we were just about to go on the air, and I said to the crew, all right, are we ready for the magic to happen? Are we ready to go on the radio and make radio magic? And nobody said anything.
We already interrupted Race Newscast.
Yeah. Nobody said anything. Well, you know, we'll do it anyway.
Alan killed a moth. Other than that, we were...
Wait, who killed the moth? What couldn't have been me? You don't want the PETA people to be calling me.
I meant the radio show. Okay, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this day, which is a Thursday, and it is the 25th,
yeah,
I believe.
It's somebody's birthday.
July. It is somebody's birthday.
Can we sing?
We certainly can. You ready?
You don't want to.
No,
do
you don't want to do that.
Okay. I want to. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Alan. Happy birthday to you.
That was terrible.
Thank you. Happy birthday, Alan.
Well, as you see, the magic is happening. Look at that.
And now, that's all the time we have.
So this dawned on me this morning. So you have self-identified yourself as 72 years old for the past 6 months. So now that you actually are 72.
I'm 73.
You're 73. That's what I thought.
Now what happens is you start to do, my brother always talks about my identical twin brother.
How old is he?
Hey.
He's actually 74.
You see the magic that we get.
He's
here.
74 because he got caught up in this advancing yourself 1 year. And then he forgot, I think, that he was 1 year older. And now I think he's advancing himself another year. I'm not sure of it, but that's a possibility.
All right. So you are into your 73rd year.
The golden times, eh?
Do you feel any different now?
Yes.
Than you did.
Oh yeah. I'm meaner. I'm leaner.
I just meant from yesterday, but okay. Yeah. But
I think that's true.
Still true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations. Happy birthday.
An ugly silence hangs over the room.
How are you celebrating? How are you celebrating your 70?
We're all going to dinner. Sarah and Dan and Dan and Roselle and me.
That sounds very nice.
We're all going out to dinner at an undisclosed location.
Okay.
Understood.
Will sushi be involved?
No.
No. Uh-huh. So real food.
Oh, no. Wait.
That's where you get as a birthday present. You actually get to eat.
A place in the Southern Berkshires, I think, called the Stagecoach, I believe it's called.
Yeah, the undisclosed location known as the
Stagecoach.
That's where we're going.
And our reservations are at 7. And if you'd like to join us,
stop
by.
Six.
Alan! Shush!
Say 72 years old.
6:30.
You need to get the early bird special.
Yeah, that's right.
It's off to Shoney's for the 3 p.m. all-you-can-eat buffet.
Sounds like a good time. And well, we wish you a happy birthday. That's very exciting.
Well, thank you.
We're
it is
very
exciting.
Happy.
I had a birthday this year.
Oh, did you?
Yes, this year you had a birthday?
Yes, in fact,
it was just the other day.
No kidding.
Really? Yes.
Well, happy birthday
thank
to you.
Very much.
Happy
no need to sing.
Happy birthday, dear Ira. Happy birthday to you.
Are you as willing to share your accomplishment?
I am 65.
Okay.
Oh, good for you.
Yes. Whoa.
Yes.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well,
which of us looks older?
Just like my grades.
65. It passed.
I remember. I remember the Spanish Regents.
Good enough.
Well, mine was biology.
We have many stories to talk about today. Although
I don't think you introduced me or anybody.
Oh,
okay.
But that's okay.
All right.
I don't know. I'm a newspaper guy. I don't know what's
joining us for the discussion today is WAMC's 72-year-old Alan Chartok, newsman Ray Graff, and Daily Freeman publisher emeritus, the 65-year-old Ira Fosfeld.
Pleasure to be here.
Delight to have you here.
Thank you
very much, as always, for joining us. All right. Let us... as we start the show, and Ira just gently says, I don't think you introduced anybody.
Well,
no, not only that, Ira said, are we on TV? Of course we are. Yes. on the internet.
Yes, at WAMC.org.
Right, and he said, are we still doing that? And, you know, people can
tune in and see it.
So view now. And he immediately, as he was saying that, he was flattening his hair.
Yes, I cloned my hair.
Yeah.
Well, singular.
Yes. But you look very natty.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the tie, you look very nice.
Well, I'm still working. You know,
yeah.
I did look up at the monitor and saw some woman who didn't look like me.
No, no, that's a different monitor. We've never been able to figure out how to do that because when we did it, there was a lag.
There was a lag.
Oh, yes.
And it would screw us up. So instead, we just have the Today Show one.
Yes. Well, I've been accused of lagging down a program before. So it could,
well, yeah. Here we go.
Yeah,
we have 45 minutes to prove that wrong. Let us begin with this story, which is the House rejects effort to curb NSA phone surveillance. This broke about 9 o'clock last night. The U.S. House on Wednesday narrowly defeated a proposal to sharply restrict the NSA's phone surveillance program that was exposed by Edward Snowden, who remains in an airport. Alan, what do you make of this story?
Me?
Yes.
Well, here's what I make of it. This is a very interesting realignment of our politics. So if you think about that, this is not your traditional Republicans versus Democratic politics. Now we have self-styled libertarians, people who believe the maximum that the government should stay out of your life. We have some Democrats. We have Republicans who think that they can tie this to Obama. And we have some Democrats who believe that, you know, they don't want to get seen as anti-security. And so it's quite a little mishmash, as we used to say. And it isn't the usual sort of lineup. And I'm fascinated by that. I tend to fall on, I don't want the government listening to my phone calls. I just don't. Because first they do it because they want to find out whether you've got a gun in your heel. I don't know if you saw the pictures in the paper this morning. Somebody got, I believe, taken off an airplane with a gun in their shoe.
No. In the heel of the shoe.
In the heel of the shoe. So you want to protect against that. On the other hand,
Maxwell Smart.
Mm. On the other hand, do you really want to? Oh, boy.
His phone is causing interference.
Well, that's because everyone is wishing you a happy birthday and all of the congratulatory messages are coming in.
I turned it off. Yes, I've had two so far.
All right. Well, I'm sure it will only
My son Jonas this morning, what he did was to send in a tweet. And my phone goes off when my name is tweeted or something. I don't know what happened, but it woke me up.
Oh boy.
And you know who knows about this? Do you know that by him reaching out to you, you know who knows about
NSA.
It?
The NSA. Sure. They're
NSA.
All over it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, in any case, that's my analysis.
Nice bringing it back, Ira. Good for you.
That's my analysis of the thing. I think it's an interesting mix of people on both sides of the issue.
You know, and I don't want to get sidetracked, but I know when my father had five sons, okay? And when I would call him on his birthday, he would say, oh, you're number three. You're the third one to go. Like there was a competition as to who would be the first one to call and wish him a happy birthday.
Right, it's true.
Okay, so does your daughter get extra points for actually coming as opposed to?
Well, she's here.
Oh, she's here.
Yeah, she's
okay.
Here. Jonas is in New Orleans.
Yes. Okay.
And so that's, you know, that's where he is.
But the true test is she picking up the tab?
No, she doesn't pick up the tab.
So
I won't let anybody pick up the tab. I won't let anybody pick up the tab. I pay.
I mean, kids are kids, after all.
That's right.
I mean, they still have responsibilities.
And they
get her a Happy Meal.
And they can be making more money than you are, but still, you're the papa.
Yes.
That's right.
Well, let me put in something about the NSA and see if I can start an argument.
I hope so.
The revelation of this phone monitoring and of the internet monitoring initially seems to me got people of all stripes exercised because they thought it was a violation of privacy, but also because the instinctual thing was to get mad at this guy Snowden for revealing what was purported to be a secret. And two things I think have happened since then. One, most people, as they've listened to what this program is all about, including the fact that everybody in Congress knew about it, that it wasn't a secret for them, sort of expected that, particularly now with the internet, if there's anybody on the internet or on a cell phone now,
or on any phone,
who doesn't think that somebody is watching, they're in a fantasy world. And by the way, we heard, I think, that before the internet, they were monitoring snail mail. They were watching. So this is not new, and I think that the fact that the Congress continues it shouldn't come as a real surprise, because I think they're pretty much where most of the country is. The other thing about Snowden is I think Snowden was perhaps starting to get a little sympathy, particularly from media quarters, who was seen as a whistleblower in the finest sense of whistleblowing. People are a little bit more reluctant to give him that credit now because of this whole asylum business.
But, you know, the interesting thing about the vote last night and this issue in general, you got President Obama, Boehner, and Michelle Bachmann all on the same side. Man. And how often does that happen?
I can't say that on the air.
No.
No, you know, I was trying to make a point before you guys intervened.
Talking about your birthday.
No, and that is because we have this, maybe it's because they want to protect us, quote, and secure us. But then where does it go?
Well, that's right. And
where does it go?
I think since post 9/11, most Americans have sort of accepted this as the way of doing business. And if it's going to protect us, then we'll forego that little bit of privacy. But you're right. What's next?
And when some politician gets a piece of information, you know, boss, you know, here's what Shartak said about you on the telephone today. And then, you know, all of a sudden, there's a tax audit. I mean, I'm not saying it's a little paranoid, of course, but it's been known to happen. Nixon did it. Others did it. Why not?
I mean, here's a benign thing that you've already, I'll remind you because it was so many years ago, but that I've just gone through. I'm turning 65. In the months leading up to me turning 65, I'm getting all this mail from healthcare companies touting me on what they can provide me above and beyond Medicare.
Yeah.
Now, the only healthcare company I currently deal with is MVP. That's the one my company uses. How do all these other companies know what age I am and that I'm approaching 65? At some point in time, they're involved with some sort of census data or who knows where. I mean, these kinds of insertions in our lives are just pervasive. We almost don't even think about them anymore.
Yeah.
Now, you remember that was 7 or 8 years ago since that happened with you.
Ow. Ira, you are...
Yes, it was so long ago. I mean, it was in black and white.
Look, Ira, if you want to enter into some kind of competition on physicality, do that.
No.
But let's leave that alone.
No, I won't do that.
Joe, this is the best show ever.
I think the three of us are tilting the table in our direction.
I hope so.
Just let them have at it. We'll just go have a cup of coffee.
No, let Joe have another swig of that stuff.
Well, I can't get enough of it. We just recorded the media project. We did this for 22 minutes and 50 seconds.
And now you get to go.
Now
we continue. This is overtime. I just want to touch on what you said about Snowden because, I mean, just because everyone perhaps knew or suspected it, doesn't get you off the hook for violating the contract that you have with the agency that you're working with to say things publicly that you vowed you would not say.
Well, isn't that what whistleblowing is all about? And that sometimes if a person feels strongly enough about what he or she is revealing to the health and welfare of our company, the country, that they'll feel like they need to do it. You know, the Daniel Ellsberg in the Pentagon Papers is the prime example. But the question now with this guy is, the question I had initially is how he had this information, because he was not a government employee. He was a contractor and not a particularly high up contractor. So that was almost as important to me as the information that he revealed, because there may well be really, really serious information that somebody's going to reveal who shouldn't even have access to.
I actually have a different question. The question is, are we better off having this information?
Oh, I think the answer is yes. I think in a free society such as ours, we need to know what the government is doing in our name.
And to have the debate that they had on the House floor yesterday.
Yes.
So this is going to sound like a bit of a trifle, but I'll ask it anyway. And that is, so he remains in the airport. Is he just...
they gave him a room.
They gave him a room in the airport.
There's
a
room.
Is it like a hotel?
He's got a room.
He's like taken care of.
Yeah, it's like the Hilton in the Chicago O'Hare Airport.
Okay, all right. Is that what it is?
He's not sleeping on the hard plastic chairs.
No. But I believe
that's what they make it sound like. Yeah. You know that he's but sort I think of like a stranded passenger. Yeah.
But what are they called? They had a name for it. It seems to me that that airport is almost like a no-touch zone that people go right. there and they for whatever reason they're allowed to be there and nobody can bother them. He also plays the piano bar at night. I understand.
Yeah. Well, you know, you gotta make up a couple bucks. We're gonna take a quick
underwriting
break.
His ex-girlfriend's a pole dancer, so she comes.
Oh, all right, sir. Ira is rocking and rolling today.
That's true. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and then we'll go to NPR News. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Shadowland Theater, Ellenville, presenting Boeing Boeing, a farce about a jet-age bachelor in Paris, directed by Brendan Burke, through August 4th at the newly renovated Shadowland, shadowlandtheater.org. Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, featuring Miele, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, Vapori Vapor Cleaning, Sales, Service, and Repairs, lexivac.com. Harrington's Lumber, Millwork, and Building Supplies, offering Cedar, Ecolife, Outback, Aztec, and Fiberson Decking, Deck Design, and Delivery Service. We share your passion, harringtons.com. And the Research Foundation for SUNY on Facebook, facebook.com/RFSUNY.
I'm heading back to pack a bag, to head out on the road, to take away what I know is mine. And I'm running down past the...
Welcome back to our panel discussion on the roundtable this morning. Ira Fussfeld is here, Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, the birthday boy, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We just have a minute or two before we go over to NPR News and catch up with the headlines for the day. And so I guess as we put this NSA story to rest, is this always going to be a fight? I mean, it seems as though we really haven't come to any clear forward policy that it will always sort of be in flux.
I believe, I hate to say this, that this may be the beginning of the end unless we're careful.
Yeah.
In other words,
the end of what?
The end being
well,
what?
1984. I mean, in other words, at what point, in the name of security, does Big Brother start to tell us to look at everything we say, everything we do, and we can look, we may look back on this time and this discovery by Snowden as the principal point in the debate as to what has happened to our civil liberties, and it can only get worse. And now, when the United States Congress narrowly defeats any effort to put a top on it, it may be our last best chance.
So is it a compelling argument in your mind that the government will say, look how it has protected us since 9/11, that here is your option?
That is what they say.
Yeah, and is that a compelling argument for you?
You know, it's always a matter of balance. Mm-hmm. Do I want fascism in the name of protecting me? Because that's what every fascist or communist government has always done. I'm protecting you, and that's why you should be grateful to me, and that's why you should sacrifice your civil liberties.
So as you head into midterms and you have voted on this, how proudly do you go back to your district?
I think you go back very carefully. I think you go, but I suspect, for all you bridge players, that this security argument...
You are 72.
This, he didn't say bingo.
There are a few of us. This security business always trumps civil liberties. It does in the end. And that's what's so scary about what's happening now.
We're going to take a break and get the latest from NPR News. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Ira Fussfeld, and welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable, WAMC.org. And we'll continue our conversation after this news break from NPR. Welcome back to the program and our panel discussion on the roundtable this morning. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or our Twitter page. It's at WAMC Roundtable if you want to tweet at us.
Mm-hmm.
I would love it if people tweeted to me, but my handle is at Ira Fussfeld. I was going to use at Carlos Danger.
Yeah,
but it was
Carlos
Danger.
Yeah, so it was taken. Yes. And oh, what a name!
Ira Fussfeld is just not doesn't have that zing that Carlos Danger
has. It doesn't.
Has.
I agree.
It wasn't until you emailed me last night that I realized your initials are IF.
Yes, that's right.
I never noticed that before.
I started signing my memos in the building as IF, and people were saying IF what? Yeah,
if not that, if not Ira, who? Let's go to the other big issue the other big story that happened yesterday, and that is, of course, something that was teased for quite a while, and that was the president's focus on the economy and making a major policy announcement. He chose Warrensburg, Missouri, to do this, and it was an interesting speech. He once again tried to move past the debate over the guns and surveillance and scandal and to look at a program to lift the economy and help the middle class, which, without sounding too much like a cynical journalist, seems to be exactly what he's been trying to do since he got into office in 2008, right?
Mm. Well, I don't think he had anything particularly new yesterday. It doesn't mean it's bad or good. I just don't think it was new. I think he's trying to get out on he's been successful in front of large audiences. He gives good speeches. People react well generally to his speaking, and so it's smart for him to get out of Washington where it's just a pit. I have a question for Alan that's related to this, and it's certainly not just Obama. But when I saw the clips again last night, there he was with the peanut gallery behind him.
Mm, he knows
and,
how to do that.
But as they all are doing, and
remember when McCain ran and he had Chuck Connors, I think, and
Chuck Norris.
Yes. Yeah.
And a bunch of really old guys standing behind him.
But do you think that that's effective? I mean, what's the point?
Sure. The point is to say, I'm the young guy.
Oh, you think that's what it is?
And I'm for you. And because if he can wake that sleeping giant known as kids, who traditionally have not voted, which is why, by the way, from the very first day, he started giving speeches all around the country on the student loans, because he knew that this was something that was so close to kids that it might actually motivate them to get out there. And so, yes, if you can show the president with the young people behind him, it makes the parents proud. They don't say, "Oh, well, that's not us." It identifies it. I think it's a terrific use of background. Hmm.
I think it's a terrific way, in a very subtle way, he is trying to paint all of these things that have been happening as, quote, phony scandals. Which one's phony? AP, IRS, NSA? He says, with his endless parade of distractions and political posturing and phony scandals. So this is a very subtle way of saying, that's all nonsense. We're moving on now.
I thought you were going to say something even more profound than that, Ray.
Hard to believe. I think, you know.
I thought you were going to be intelligent. Silly me.
Yeah, forget about it.
I didn't say that. But from a cyclical point of view, we're actually doing pretty good in this country. We're coming out of it. The stock market is at the highest it's been. The jobs are going up. And I think what he's doing is capitalizing on that. He's basically saying, yeah, we have more to do. And people know it because they vote their pocketbooks.
But I think Ira's point is a good one, that there's nothing really new about this. There's nothing really substantially different other than it took a good shot at the Republicans and in the speech saying that the gridlock has only gotten worse. So other than a wake-up call, what was it? I mean, because we kept on hearing the term major policy announcement.
Well, I think they were. And I think that he is laying out what has to be done. Now, because he said it before and because the Republicans wouldn't do it, doesn't mean that they're not major. Doesn't mean that we can't have the equivalent of an FDR Civilian Conservation Corps going out and bringing employment to people who traditionally are not employed. Doesn't mean that. So I'm saying that you can't dismiss it because he said it before.
Well, I think he's trying to retake the narrative. His poll numbers, his disapproval ratings are down, but they're still better by far than is Congress's. And so I think he's proven to be a good campaigner, and he's in campaign mode. I would say, to Ray's point about the scandals, there were three events that coincided that were generally considered to be scandals at first. One was the AP, one was Benghazi, and one was the IRS. Many people are now saying Benghazi was what it was, and it was ginned up by Fox News and the New York Post, and that it was not the president's fault. Many are saying that. The IRS, it seems to me that Daryl Issa, who made all sorts of great pronouncements about
a Republican
congressman from California, that whole scandal has largely seemed to have gone away. And the AP, I'm not sure how much that resonated with the public. It certainly did with the press. And Holder, at least for the time being, grabbed that scandal, the attorney general, saying, oh, we shouldn't have done what we did and the press should be protected. So,
and to your point, Ira, I suspect that a lot of the people who are listening right now have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, with the AP in particular. I think that's true.
And also, wasn't the AP story kind of got eclipsed by the NSA story?
Yes.
In the sense of people
listening
in. You
want to remind
in.
Everybody what the AP story was?
You know, I almost can't remember.
Well, the AP story was is that they were going in and listening. It was part of a lawsuit,
a leak investigation,
and they had gone in and seized
AP records
of calls, and not just on a particular case, which they had done in the past for particular investigations, but overall.
Yeah.
You know, there is something called the institutional presidency. I'm not talking about the Democratic president or the Republican president. I'm talking about the thread that weaves through the two Bushes and Clinton and Obama, in which they are taking similar positions that are protective of what they consider to be the security of the United States government, including something that I don't like at all, this sort of business with the press and the AP. So I think that when you examine what's happening, it stops being partisan, even though there are people on the other side in Congress who will take a shot because it's convenient to take a shot. Mm-hmm. But it's consistent with all of these guys.
Yeah, the press thing will come back up again on the front pages because of the circuit court decision regarding James Rison, the New York Times reporter who the circuit court has said he must reveal his sources. And so we have another one of those circumstances where if he does not reveal his sources, he risks going to jail.
Brenda Starr goes to jail.
Yeah, and as one of the stories described it, this is going to be particularly uncomfortable for the administration because the administration's position now after the AP scandal is, oh, we need to protect journalists. So,
because they know they're in trouble.
Yeah.
And because the administration, let's face it, is close to the New York Times.
Yeah.
I mean, the New York Times basically is in a defensive mode when it comes to Obama. And so when you take on your friends and you put their guy in jail, they're going to be forced to editorialize and to opinionize and to do stories on.
Well, that may be true, but I still give the New York Times credit for having the credibility and the common sense to turn on their friends if the friends deserve to be turned on, Anthony Weiner among them. Having
Stalin.
So.
that's not funny. That's the old McCarthy way of doing things.
We're going to take a break. When we continue, we will tackle a few more stories that are making news. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Middletown Medical, with walk-in urgent care centers in Middletown and Allenville for the treatment of injuries and illness, minimal wait times, evening and weekend hours. MiddletownMedical.com for insurance providers. The SEMBRIC, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting a vocal recital with Viktor Antipenka, July 27th at 7:30 p.m., thesembrick.org. And Weekend of Chamber Music, Jeffersonville, New York, presenting Transformations, its 20th anniversary music festival with John Harbison, composer in residence, now through July 27th, wcmconcerts.org.
Thank you. I must confess this blood on my chest.
Well, very uplifting, yeah. I guess.
Bumper music. You didn't hear it, I don't think, Alan. You
didn't
have headphones
on. Earphones on.
Must confess, enough. There's blood on my chest, I believe.
I should have worn my black suit.
Yeah.
Welcome back to our panel. I was just looking up what happened, besides you being born, what happened on July 25th, 1941?
It was the Andrea Doria, right?
No, that was later. That was
now,
in the 50s.
FDR,
wasn't that the Nina Pinta and Santa Maria? Oh, wait a minute.
They hadn't bent the Nina yet.
FDR.
I mean, it's important to remember that I was alive in the Second World War.
That's right. It is important to remember that. FDR banned the selling of benzene gasoline to Japan.
Yeah, okay.
That happened on this date in 1941. Also, Red Sox lefty Grove.
Oh yeah,
becomes the 12th to win 300 games. His last victory.
I told you this was an important date in
history. Yeah, an important day in history. Emmett Till, born today. No. Nate Thurman, born today.
Wow,
Nate Thurman, Silver.
Is that old? Wow, former NBA player.
NBA star for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Well, among others.
Yes. That's really anybody that the two biggies. And, of course, Alan Chartrack, of course. So, just for the record.
And Lefty Grove, that had to do with, he threw with his left arm. It had nothing to do with his political leanings.
I believe that is the case. Yes. And oddly enough, I even have the box score of the game that was played on Friday, July 25th at Fenway Park. But
oh,
I will,
exciting.
And 1941 was when Ted Williams hit 406. Am I correct about
that? You are
that?
Absolutely yes. correct on that. So, one of those stories, of course, having to do with Japan, which nicely brings us to our next story,
which is
the president has nominated Caroline Kennedy to be ambassador to Japan. Caroline Kennedy to be ambassador, moving to give this enduring political dynasty a diplomatic post that quite frankly, usually goes to a political heavyweight, although I think it could be argued that Caroline Kennedy is a political heavyweight.
How could anybody be heavier than the woman who, along with her now departed uncle, brought Obama probably the nomination? Against
yes.
Hillary Clinton. When she walked, I'll never forget it as long as I live, when she walked out on that stage with Uncle Teddy and they endorsed Obama, I think that was it. I don't think they needed any more. That put them over the top.
Although, yes, without question, but in terms of her gravitas beyond her name, which certainly carries a lot of weight, it seems to me when she had her aborted one and only attempt to run for office, I think she was going to run for Senate, she just fell down because she couldn't communicate well.
She was not a good communicator.
No,
you're right. But on the other hand, I think it's a brilliant appointment.
Yeah, and she'll have an interpreter now, so it'll work easier, right? Yeah.
Well, how do they say in Japanese? I have a question.
So demeaning to women and to others.
I think it was just demeaning to Caroline Kennedy, yeah. actually.
I did hear a report last night about this that took note of the fact that women are still I don't want to say second-class citizens in Japan, but not as important in Japan as our men. And there was a question as to how she might fit in. Because
this is the daughter of the martyred president of the United States, the only remaining child of that president and of Jackie O. And let me tell you, I have a feeling that it's going to be a brilliant appointment because, look, she's going to be surrounded by the right people, you know, in the embassy. She is a lawyer. She is an expert on art and politics and the rest. I think that the Japanese are going to treat her like a superstar.
And not to mention the fact that the close ties that she has to the Oval Office, close ties that she has to the president, former ambassadors to Japan, Walter Mondale.
Yep, Walter Mondale.
Howard Baker. And Tom Foley. So, some political heavyweights there.
You believe it, and it has been used as these ambassadorships have often been used as political payoffs for services well done. It's very interesting the way they did this. They leaked it for months. They said
it's been down there for months.
They said it was coming. They didn't do it. I think they were running it up the flagpole to see what the reaction was going to be. It'd be very interesting to see if the usual suspects who have been, you know, against Obama appointments raise their heads and say, and their hands, and say, you know, we're opposed to Caroline Kennedy. I have a feeling you'd better be careful. It
this,
won't
this
help.
This does require congressional approval, does it? I'm not sure.
I don't know
the answer to that.
Yes, I. It, well,
yeah, he nominated her.
Well, I think it does because, yeah, I'm pretty sure it does because you remember that there was a Republican governor of Salucci, I think. Was it Salucci or Weld? It was Weld.
Yeah. Well,
and one Republican, was it Strom Thurmond, maybe, who said nothing to him.
Yeah, so I wonder if the timing of the nomination after all of these months of run-up has to do with the agreement they just reached with the Senate last week to get his nominees through.
Good.
The other thing that was a point that was made is that while Caroline Kennedy may not have firsthand ties to Japan, that historians note that certainly her father played a critical role as president in repairing the alliance between Japan and the United States, and that Japanese officials noted that upon news of her of her appointment.
And dare I mention PT-109?
But let's remember also that the president has been gone 50 years, and there are a lot of people in Japan who may not have the resonance with the Kennedy name as we do in this country still.
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I think Kennedy has had a pervasive, maybe deserved, maybe not, influence on the way the world sees the United States. It's vibrant, tall, you know, sexy, you know, president who people really saw as a rock star. And there are still stories about how, I think Lyndon Johnson talked about, he would go into a house in West Virginia and there would be a picture of Jesus on one wall and a JFK on another wall. And the martyred brother and the whole syndrome, I don't know. I think this is worldwide. And I think it's been passed down.
No, I was just going to say that I can't believe I'm using the word Benghazi twice in the same 10 minutes. But, but other than when the ambassador in Benghazi was murdered, generally speaking, ambassadorships are viewed to be sort of ceremonial, placid, kind of non-dangerous positions. And I was ordinarily I'd say, well, what is she going to do? Is she just going to show up at cocktail parties and glad hand people? Or is it a more important position than that, particularly in a country that's an ally of ours?
Well, don't you think it's a lot about what she does, what she decides to make of it? As I say, they will certainly support her with terrific people being there who will help. I think a lot depends on what she wants to do with it. I suspect she'll want to do something with it because I have a feeling that she's a potential political candidate in the future.
Just to go back to what you were talking about as far as appointments, I just wanted to clarify that in these particular cases with ambassadors, according to Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2 of the U.S. Constitution, known as the Appointments Clause, it empowers the President of the United States to appoint certain public officials with the advice and consent of the U.S. Senate. This clause allows lower-level officials to be appointed without the advice and consent process, but does not have to go through a full...
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. That was...
Very helpful, I know, Alan. Thank you. It was my birthday gift to you.
Oh,
we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna be back, and we'll
fill up 4 minutes.
I was gonna say we're gonna fill up 4 minutes, and of course, what would a day be without talking about Anthony Weiner? So we'll do that when we come back. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.